The Unruffled Beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals Thursday, 10 p.m., in time for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling right here on listener-sponsored 90.1 KPFT Houston. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, professor of communication at the University of Houston downtown, along with Jacob Reiner, working the boards. You know, just like your donations, your kindness lingers on. And I want to thank Andre Burnside for recently making his generous pledge to this program, a program that powers our lives every week with profound narratives and enchanted folktales delivered by storytellers, common folks with uncommon stories to tell, whose journeys become our destinations, week in and week out, never to disappoint. Never, because their stories, our stories, always matter. And as you're going to quickly discover, tonight's story is no exception. Tonight's guest teller is my friend Dr. Warren Holloman, professor of behavioral science and director of the Program of Faculty Health and Well-Being at UTMD Anderson Cancer Center. He also founded and directed the Compassion and the Art of Medicine Lecture and Performing Arts Series, now in its 25th year. A leading scholar, Warren's been lead author of articles in JAMA and Lancet, to name just a few, editor of Fundamentals of Clinical Practice, a textbook on the patient, doctor, and society, and author of The Human Rights Movement, Western Values in the Theological Perspective. Dr. Holloman holds an A.B. in History from Harvard, an M.A. and Ph.D. in Religious Studies at Rice, and an M.A. in Marriage and Family Counseling from UH Clear Lake. In his spare time, if he can find any, he bikes, he hikes, he writes plays, and he tells stories. He and I were at the Moth one night, and I'm glad we were, because knowing him has shown me what a superb storyteller can do, and, as his shortened resume suggests, what a very compassionate person he is. And believe me, storytelling and compassion are inextricably connected. It's getting late. I can't even talk, but don't mind me. I teach speech. Warren, how you doing? Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
It's always a pleasure, and you're one of those repeat offenders on this show, and we love it. We really love it. Tell us about the mission of the Compassion and Art of Medicine.
Sure. When I began teaching in the Texas Medical Center back in the 1980s, I discovered that students begin medical school with lots of idealism and altruism, and yet by the time they're in their second or third year of training, they've become much more cynical. So I started the course to remind them of the positive values and emotions that drew them into medicine in the first place, and to encourage them to maintain that altruism and that idealism throughout their careers.
Yeah. You know, I was recently talking to a physician friend of mine who was telling me that what he learned in medical school is that compassion is being cold and unprofessional. And what you have to do is to show non-hope. You have to be able to show that medicine is a science. You have to be exact. And if you enhance the healing process, probably you won't. That's good. But in the meantime, that's not going to work. Physicians have to be good communicators. And there's never going to be a better substitute for anything than a physician and a patient communicating with each other, regardless of what we have. And that's why I think that compassion is one of those variables that we have underestimated for so many decades. And I'm so glad that you do that. And I have some stories myself about how compassion doesn't prolong life, but it really does enhance the healing process. You are what I would like to refer to as an intellectually ambidextrous person. You're able to weave interests and integrate disciplines into a very practical context, Ward, and your book, The Human Rights Movement, Western Values and Theological Perspectives, is an example of this. And I know it's unfair to ask you to respond to this in just a few seconds, but I'm going to do it anyway. What is an example of a theological perspective on human rights?
Well, let's take the example of healthcare. I would propose that from the perspective of many faith traditions, we shouldn't just regard health care as a privilege of those who could afford it, but at least in a community or a society that values human beings as persons, as children of God, health care should be more than that. It should be a right, something that everybody has access to.
Yeah, absolutely. Spoken like a good man and spoken just like Bernie Sanders. Right? He's not here, but God only knows he would say the same thing. He would say the same thing. And we're allowed to say that here on this station, at least. When introducing tonight's show, I said tonight's show, show stories matter. And all stories matter, but your narrative is about your wife and about compassion, the single person and the single ideal that I think matter most to you. Marcia, that's her name, right?
Yes. Yeah.
It's a family doctor. But she's a family doctor in a little different setting than most of us would assume. And you call this story Married to Medicine. We're looking forward to it.
Thank you, Hank. Yeah, I'm going to tell this story for better or for worse, for richer or for poorer, in sickness and in health. So, going back to about 1975, 76, I was still a teenager. I looked across the courtyard of my college campus, and I fell in love. At first, I'd have to say it was just the way she walked. And then it was the way her hair bounced when she walked. Something about that caught my attention as a teenage boy. I could recognize that walk and that hair from a mile away. And then when I got closer, I noticed something else. She had the softest, warmest, brownest eyes, and they matched perfectly her empathic and caring spirit. After I got to know her, I learned something about those eyes. They didn't see as good as they looked. She was legally blind, but thanks to contact lenses, she could see well, and she could look good. I later learned that she always carried a pair of those clunky Coke bottle glasses with her, just in case of an emergency, and I always thanked God for contact lenses. So, I fell for her, she fell for me, and we became the consummate lovebirds. We did everything together. We didn't just go to the movie together. We sat in the love seat of the River Oak Cinema together. We ate every meal together. We jogged together. When she started medical school here at Baylor College of Medicine, I even took a summer job in the school's maintenance department just so we could eat lunch together. We couldn't fathom being separated for an entire day. Looking back, it was a magical time. We worked hard, we played hard, we talked late into the night, and yet we rose early the next morning, energized and ready to go. We lived all year on the income I earned from that minimum wage summer job, plus a small stipend from my graduate school. I realized that the Beatles were right. All you need is love. Now, for most couples, Camelot ends gradually. But for us, it happened overnight, literally, only a year after we were married. It was January 3rd, 1980. That was to be her first day of clinical rotations as a medical student, her first day to wear her white coat, the day she would begin fulfilling her life's calling of caring for sick and suffering humanity. She was quite excited. She had hated the basic sciences, 8 hours of lecture every day, cutting on a cadaver the rest of the time. Now she would treat real patients. She arose early that morning. I still remember she stuffed her pockets of her white coat with a stethoscope, a reflex hammer, index cards summarizing everything she had learned in basic sciences, a Hershey's bar, and 35 cents. So, I wanted to mark this occasion, so that afternoon I came home early to cook a nice dinner. At 4 o'clock, the phone rang, and there was panic in her voice. "Go ahead and eat without me." "I can wait," I said. "I've got nothing else to do. They told me I'm on call, and I think that means I'm supposed to stay here late. Maybe all night." "No problem," I said. "I'll come to you. We'll celebrate at the Bentob Hospital cafeteria. There's no time to eat. I have 14 patients. They're all really sick, and I don't have the foggiest idea what I'm doing." There was a click and silence. Wow, she had never cut me off before. For the next few years, she would practically live in that hospital, and I would spend lonely evenings at a $2 all-you-can-eat pizza parlor. You may remember it, Chicago Pizza, in Montrose, with my new mistress, Ms. Pac-Man. It was pathetic. But before that long day's journey into night, and while I was still in denial about the looming changes in our relationship, I had this moment of inspiration. Realizing she had skipped dinner and had only 35 cents in her pocket, I rose early the morning of January 4th, cooked a hot breakfast, covered the plate with tinfoil, got on my bicycle, and started pedaling to the Texas Medical Center. I steered with one hand and held the hot plate in the other. I still remember it was a cold morning, so I kept switching hands, using the hot plate to thaw out my frozen fingers. From my summer job experience, I knew the students on the internal medicine rotation passed by the maintenance office every morning precisely at 8 o'clock, returning to the hospital from a lecture in the medical school auditorium. So I stood there in the hallway and waited, chatting with my buddies from maintenance and feeling good about myself and what I was about to do. Then the train of students began, and we remarked how they all looked alike in their unisex scrubs. After a minute or so, though, it dawned on us that the last student had passed, and I was still standing there holding the hot plate. My buddies made jokes about how, after just one night of separation, my bride and I no longer recognized each other. I stopped feeling so magnanimous. So, I ran down the hallway, the hot plate in my hand, and I caught up with the train of students, and somewhere in the pack I saw a face, well, I'd have to say part of a face that looked vaguely familiar. "Is that you?" She nodded, but she didn't say anything. I didn't speak either. I needed a few moments to take it all in, to comprehend what I was seeing. She looked tired, and I'd say almost robotic. I showed her the hot plate and said, "Let's sit down somewhere." But she repeated her mantra from the previous evening. "I've got 14 patients. They're all really sick. I don't know what I'm doing." She took the plate. She thanked me. She turned, and she disappeared into the hospital. And I have to say, it seems like she's been there ever since. That evening, I learned all the reasons why I hadn't recognized her walk or her hair or even those brown eyes as she walked past me that early that morning. It turns out, when you've been up all night working, you no longer move so fast or so light in the way she used to walk. When you don't have time to brush your hair or you haven't brought a brush with you, you stuff it inside your ski cap. You cover it up, and it doesn't float softly behind. And when you stay awake all night, you have to remove your contact lenses and hide your soft brown eyes behind those ugly, clunky Coke bottle glasses. Over the next few years, I came to realize something. My love was not enough for her. The Beatles were just plain wrong. In addition to love, we need a meaning and a purpose beyond ourselves and each other. I learned this by seeing the joy and satisfaction on her face when she came home from work each day. Tired, exhausted, fatigued, but satisfied because she knew she had made a difference in the lives of her patients. Later, when I began my career in community health, I got a chance to experience some of this joy and satisfaction as well. Now, I just say that all this is true, but it doesn't change the fact that love hurts. Sometimes I resent having to share my wife with her patients, with her call schedule, with her pager at all hours of the night, with her eternally continuing medical education, with her endless hours of paperwork, with the record keeping, learning the electronic medical record. It's not just the pleasure of unencumbered love I miss, it's the pain I feel from the grief of losing her, even to something as important as her life's calling. When she was in training, then trying to establish herself early in her career, we took solace and comfort in the belief that one day medicine would no longer demand so much of her time and energy. She'd be able to find a balance between her career and her, quote, life. At least to some extent, we thought we'd rediscover that magic, that unencumbered love, that Camelot. If anything, though, I'd have to say the reverse has happened. Many changes in medicine. Quantity of care has replaced quality of care as the measuring stick of success, and it hoists physicians like my wife by the petard of the productivity quotas and assembly line medicine. The demand for physicians far outweighs the supply, so there are always more patients for people like my wife to see than there is time to see them. And I'd have to say America's leaders have lacked the courage to confront the forces that drive up the cost of health care without improving the quality. And it seems to fall on physicians to make up the difference. So, like most physicians of her generation, my wife works harder than ever. Looking on the bright side, at least her life has plenty of meaning. As far as I'm concerned, way too much meaning. Now all we need is love, but there's so little time for that. Wow. Maybe the Beatles were right after all.
Yeah, I think they were. What a great story. That is both profound and pretty disclosing. How does she respond to it when you tell her that story? You must have told her that story.
Yeah, we tell that story to each other and amplify it together. And that story kind of summarizes our last 37 years together and what we've struggled with.
Yeah.
Trying to maintain a sense of commitment to our life's calling while also being faithful to each other and our family.
A lot to talk about there. I'm Hank Rubicek with Jacob Reiner, and you are listening to So What's Your Story with guest storyteller Dr. Warren Holloman on listener-sponsored corporate-free 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston. Ben Rabeck, publicity coordinator for Brazos Bookstore, is going to be my guest next week with tales about authors and more, and it will be worth tuning into. But tuning in every week ought to be a routine, one of your weekly rituals, because we are all about live stories delivered by terrific people fueled by passion. Special days ignite special themes on the program. For example, on November 5th, the show is going to be dedicated to Veterans Day, and Jacob, a vet himself, is going to tell us a little bit about it. Jacob?
Yes, sir. On November the 5th, we will have our Veterans Edition in honor of Veterans Day. We will be hosting three student veterans from University of Houston downtown. Tune in and listen to their experience and what they would like you to know about Veterans Day.
Great. Thank you, Jacob, very much. And I also want to add that on November 6th, Dr. Cornell West is going to be on the campus of the University of Houston downtown. And this Tuesday, October 19th, you'll be able to get on UHD.edu, and you'll be able to get tickets for free. You heard that right, for free. It's first come, first serve, but please get online, get your tickets. There's a lot of overflow seating, so you shouldn't have a problem. But that, again, he's going to be here on November 6th of this year, just a few weeks from now, and I'm really looking forward to it. Thank you, Jacob. And listen, while you've got the floor, why don't you tell everybody about our proud sponsor, where they meet for monthly swaps and information about their upcoming spooky event, Skyline Screamers, please.
Sure. The Houston Storytellers Guild rocks a reputation as the best storytelling group in the state. Their monthly story swaps are on the third Tuesday of the month from 7 to 8:30 p.m., located at the Multi-Service Center at 1475 West Gray. And no one will want to miss the Skyline Screamers on Saturday, October the 24th, because the Guild's top tellers will be scaring the heebie-jeebies out of everyone there. You'll be screaming from 7 to 9 at Marmion Park, located at 1802 Heights Boulevard. Admission is absolutely free, so bring your chairs, blankets, and good spirits, because you'll have more fun than the law allows.
Thank you, Jake. And by spirits, we mean mood, not booze. Just wanted to let everybody know that Screamers are going to be very child-friendly stories, so be sure to bring the youngins. So be afraid, be very afraid. Michael, have you come home? Michael? It's from Halloween. Yeah. Boomers, remember that movie? Okay, thank you. If you need additional information about the SHASD Vintage event and other fun happenings, just go to www.houstonstorytellers.org. Warren, you shared an article in Time with me entitled America's Doctors on Life Support. And I took a look at that article based on your advice, and I'm glad I did. You know, doctors burn out, increased rate of suicide, exhaustion incarnate. And your wife works furiously, as your story discloses, to get within waving distance of a 40-hour week, and the implications doesn't seem promising for filling the physician shortages anticipated in the future. Is there anything close to some tip on achieving a life balance, regardless of what we do for a living?
Let's try this one. If you believe that work-life balance is important, find friends who share your beliefs and your values, and ask them to encourage you and support you as you try to find creative solutions to this very challenging problem.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. Look for friends. Look for like-minded people. You have to look for like-minded people. And even though it doesn't sound all that profound, you know, I've been thinking the last few weeks, and I don't mind sharing this, that I want time to read a book. I want time to watch an old movie. Mm-hmm. I want time to have a real conversation with my wife. I want to be able to look at photographs. I want to be able to look outside and see if there are any leaves changing colors at all in this town. And if not, look online and try to find some. Mm-hmm. I'd like to be reminded of the season. October has always been my favorite month. You know, I remember Halloween. I remember it so well. I remember it and I love it. And every year I look forward to this time of year. And it's gone mm-hmm. in a blink. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure I'm not telling you and other people something they don't already know. But one of the things that I realize is the power of capturing a moment, an episode. Mm-hmm. And I think storytelling does that for us, because one of the things that I've learned in storytelling is that we have to be able to capture an episode, that mm-hmm. moment in time, mm-hmm. something frozen. And when we tell a story, we essentially allow it to thaw. And I think that's a good thing. But it's awfully frustrating, and I loved your story because it got me thinking about so many things that I need to entertain in my life, and I think it's all about perspective. But yeah, you know, having this life-changing balancing event gets us thinking about everything from how long am I going to work, when am I going to retire, what's this crazy world about, I really don't want to watch the news anymore. Things that you never really thought about. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The story that you told on this program the first time that you were my guest was a story that really made an indelible impression on me. And I think you know that because I was so fond of it. And I told you that. It was about a violent episode that you experienced as a young teen. And it contained a parable about tolerance and compassion. Compassion, I think, is a thread that runs through your stories. And curiously, Chekhov, a storyteller, of course, incarnate, and a physician himself, thought that medical school students should spend half their time learning what it feels to be ill. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm thinking about the film with John Hurt, the doctor. You know which movie I'm talking about?
William Hurt.
With yes. William Hurt, excuse yeah. me. William yeah. Hurt. I love that movie. And that is, and for those of you who haven't seen it, it's worth seeing. With William Hurt, he's ill, and he finds out that he's going to be okay, and now he transforms his residence. He gets mm-hmm. them to wear hospital clothes and eat hospital food, and it's just a magnificent film yeah. about compassion, and that's what I think about. But you and your wife have conveyed that compassion, in my judgment at least, requires a lot of work. And social rights activist and philosopher Desmond Tutu viewed compassion as not just feeling with someone, but seeking to change the situation. Frequently, people think compassion and love are merely sentimental. No, they're very demanding. And if you're going to be compassionate, be prepared for action. Compassion is hard work, but everything worthwhile doing is hard work. Author Eric Hoffer truly said it best. Compassion is the antitoxin of the soul, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I kind of knew what your story was about, so I found these quotations because I thought they would be that they would really dot the landscape of these stories in mm-hmm. many ways. Mm-hmm. So what is it that you are doing to strike this balance? What are you doing to strike this balance with your wife, and what are you encouraging your wife to do? I mean, you're uh-huh. you're striking that balance, right?
Yeah.
You're making efforts.
Yeah.
What is your self-imposed homework assignment? What are you doing?
Well, tomorrow morning we leave on vacation, and we try to make a commitment to take real vacations, not to take our—
Where are you going?
Going to the hill country.
Okay, we're going to all follow you. And
right? Yeah, and good we've developed a hobby together over the years of trail running. We love being outdoors. We love to jog. We don't so much like jogging on the streets. We like jogging in beautiful areas, so we're going to go to some of our favorite trails and go running.
Now, you can speak to this far better than I because of your background, but my feeling is that the vast majority of us don't have a clue about how important recreation is.
Yeah.
Is that right? Is that
it's extremely important.
Statement?
I've seen scientific studies where they controlled most of the variables, and exercise rose to the top as being the one thing that makes a positive impact on your ability to manage stress.
But, you know, in our generation, we didn't know that as a kid. I mean, for example, in my family, nobody took a vacation. That would be a bad thing to do. When I did my homework, my grandmother would say, "We'll go do it again." Right? If I had any free time, we'll go do it again.
Yeah.
I said, "Really?" Yeah, because it's got to be homework and reading and studying and vacations. Nobody does that. Lazy people take that. And that's the kind of thing you kind of grow up with. But it is the antithesis of that. You've got to take vacations. And I'm terrible at that. That is wonderful. You are enjoying guest storyteller, Dr. Warren Holloman, on So What's Your Story? Only on 90.1 KPFT Houston. And if you want to talk about storytelling, have a tale to tell, or have a suggestion about a guest, give me a call at drhank@kpft.org. And I will get back to you. When I say call me, obviously I'm talking about giving me a real quick email, but I'll call you back, give me your number, and we'll find out all about it. Tell us about the plays you've written. You're a playwright.
Yeah, that's one of the ways I try to bring some creativity into my life. And just last month, I had a play in a festival in Pittsburgh, and that was very exciting. It was a parody of Shakespeare's romantic comedies.
Wow.
You know how with Shakespeare, everything goes wrong, and yet somehow in the romantic comedies, everything comes out perfect.
Right. Absolutely.
So
perfect.
I tried to write an extreme version of that.
How do you find time to do that? You just take the time to do it.
I just make the time. Once I get started, it's hard to stop.
Yeah. Good for you.
That's pretty
magnificent. Well, you know, one of the things that I love asking people, and I want to ask you, what would you say to a listener who thinks, "I don't have a story about myself worth telling"?
I would be very surprised if that's true. You think about life is so full of stuff, happy times, sad times, angry times, confusing times, good relationships, bad relationships, times of sickness and health, times of richer and being poorer. Just reflecting, remembering, thinking about those times, it's just inherently fascinating. It's a drama.
There are all kinds of turning points, all kinds of trajectories. There are all kinds of things going on in our life, you bet. Warren, as anticipated, this has been a really fast half hour, and I want to thank you so much for assigning a significant part of your life to crafting the kind of stories that I think we need to hear, the kind we have to hear, about our collective need to uncover what matters most. And in my mind, it's to be generous with our time and hearts and to frame all of it with compassion. Scooter is next with the Inner Side to complete the backside of this Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling out, join us every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And ease into the weekend right. You keep loving a great story, and I'm going to keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. Till next week, I'm Dr. Hank, reminding you that it is absolutely never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
It's October, which brings out the worst of KPFT. As an Oktoberfest, to celebrate, we're holding a fest as an Worst Fest on October 24th at Dan Electro's Guitar Bar, located at 1031 East 24th Street in the Heights. The doors swing open at 3 p.m. The music starts at 4. All day and all night music provided by Soulfix, Robin Kirby, Blackout Vipers, Bomba Chica, Herschel Berry, Fallen Folk, Sparky Parker Band, and the funkiest band in town, Funky Mustard. So oompa a while on October 24th at Dan Electro's Guitar Bar. The $10 door fee benefits your community radio station. Nothing is better than Wurstfest. 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
Hello.
Hi, Barry.
Hi, Scooter.
So what I'd like to do, I saw